Welcome back, everybody. It's a little bit cooler now. The fifth heat wave has finally stopped, and yeah, enjoying a bit of cool air. It is episode 17 of Pod on the Parish, and I have Lee Jakeman here. How are you doing, Lee?
All well and good. Thank you, John. Thanks for inviting me along.
No worries. Yeah, no, it's really good to have you here. And where are you based, Lee?
Well, I live in Shropshire, but I work around the country, various locations, being a locum. But I'm originally from Portsmouth and spent my life travelling around the world a bit in the Air Force and with parents, and ended up in Shropshire and decided to retire here because it's such a beautiful part of the world.
Awesome. So you're travelling around the world. So what did you see? Did you go to uni or college, and what did you do
after
that?
Oh, no, I couldn't do that. No. So I joined the Air Force at 16.
Oh,
and left when
wow.
I was 41, and spent, I think it took me to the age of 37 before I spent more than half my life in the UK. You know, I originally went to school in Mauritius. My father was in the Navy, and my first school was in Mauritius. So I have very fond memories of my childhood living on a beach and sort of
Oh,
going
wow.
to school.
Oh, well, how old were you when you started going to school in Mauritius?
Well, I was there from the age of four till just before my 7th birthday.
Okay, cool. So what do you miss about the days of RAF, working in the RAF?
Nothing. It
Nothing.
was part. No, I don't miss it because I've moved on. So, what did I
Yes.
enjoy it? It was absolutely fantastic. I had a great time, met some wonderful people, did some tough, challenging things, did some enjoyable things, got to see the world. I think I traveled to something like 29 countries in my duties, spent time living in Germany. I've lived in Naples. I think I've traveled to every country in Eastern and Western Europe apart from Russia. I've visited every country on the Mediterranean border, from Mauritania right the way around to Portugal. So I'm well travelled, and done lots of interesting projects and some very mundane things. And some of the mundane things are some of the best lessons I've learned in my life.
Yes, exactly. And yes, so you're a locum clerk now. How did you pivot to local councils?
Well, to be fair, I left the Air Force back in 2007, 2008, because I didn't want to go to war again. And in my local town, there was a job advert, and I just thought, you know what, that's a bit like running a military base, you know. So when I was
True.
running a military base, I looked after families, the housing, sent the troops to Afghanistan and Iraq and that sort of thing, looked after the maintenance of the everything, non-flying, really. Yeah, so I bet it was a mini town, so it just seemed
Yeah,
very
so it's
much
like, yeah, it's a little
the
town or
same.
village. Right. So you're running the
Yeah.
whole base. Okay.
Well, no, I was running the large parts of the administrative function, so facilities management, HR, contracts, those sorts of things. Yeah.
Yeah, so it does. Yeah, it does. Like, yeah, it's similar to being a clerk. So you got the job, and then you, yeah. So what was your first job you got?
My first job was in the town where I lived at the time. It's not a million miles from where I live now, in Newport in Shropshire. And that was really quite interesting. I was very fortunate to take over, not take over, to be led by the hand by a wonderful young lady. Okay, she's 74 now, and she captured all the skills I had from my previous life and managed me into town council procedures, and you know, had a full range of services: public toilets, cemetery allotments, Christmas lights, markets, listed buildings, etc., etc. So I did that, and then I got bored of it after 10 years because I'd left a very peripatetic life in the Air Force.
Yeah.
New challenge, new challenge. And then moved on to Bridge North, which isn't a million miles away from me, which is a lovely market town just out in the West Midlands. Larger services, larger workforce. And then I went to, after sort of 4 or 5 years, I went to Kidderminster Town Council
Oh, yeah, cool.
and did that for a couple of years, and then decided I didn't want to work 9 till 9, 6 days a week, which is the requirements of a chief executive of a large council.
Yeah, it's quite full
And
on.
then so I then I didn't need a job particularly, and I did if I wanted a new car every couple of years and go on some holidays. So I decided I'd go and work for myself as a locum, and found out that if I put my name for the county associations, a little bit of work would probably come along. And then I got in touch with LGRC, who I now work for, initially as an associate and now as a partner in the business.
So, any regrets transitioning? Are you happy with, moving into locum clerking? So now you're, I guess, how?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I do miss the fact at my age that I don't get any sick pay or any holiday pay. I mean, I'm probably going to be sick for knee operation to bits and pieces. So that security is slightly gone, but I'm at a stage in my life where I'm probably, like most people my age, mortgage free or nearly mortgage free. And so those, I haven't got sort of 20 years of worrying about paying for the mortgage, that sort of thing. So the work-life balance is a little bit better. The pressure is more, okay, but it comes in fits and starts. Okay, so I've quite enjoyed it. So a new challenge. I've got to meet new people work in different ways. And by being a locum in some quite big councils over the last couple of years, I've just learned more and more. I've seen more good behaviour and more bad behaviour, and then just picked out the good bits. And I think it's improved me as a clerk.
And that's exactly what you want to share with us today, all this experience you've drawn from all your locuming gigs. That's
Yeah,
right.
I mean, don't make the mistakes I made early on, or if you make them, learn from them quicker than I have. Okay, then maybe you can be a bit more happier at 50 than I was. I'm not saying I wasn't happy, but you've got control of your destiny.
Awesome. I mean, we normally ask people, tell us a little bit about you that most people won't know about you, but I guess it is the RAF gigs, the RAF job. Or
Oh,
is there another
I mean,
little sneaky secret?
well, I've done some quite high-profile things in the Air Force. I worked 9/11. On 9/11, I worked in contingency planning about what we might do if other civilian aircraft in Europe were heading for the Eiffel Tower or the Leaning Tower of Pisa or the Colosseum. So I was in conference calls with supporting these conference calls with national leaders about that. So I worked that. But I think it's probably one of the funniest stories of me is a personal thing. So many years ago, my wife was in hospital and she asked me to go and get some Tampax. This is a clean story, honestly. Okay.
Yeah.
So I went to the local supermarket or Boots the Chemist or whatever. I got to an aisle that I'd never visited as a man. Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
With ladies' bits and
I've been
pieces in it.
there.
Okay. Okay. So I was looking across this r array of offerings from
Products.
Tampax. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work out which one to buy. So I asked a woman, I said, excuse me, okay, I don't normally buy these sort of things, but my wife needs some. She's in hospital at the moment. She asked me to get these. And I said, I'm not sure which ones to buy. I said, because it's got 10 on a packet and 16 and 24. I said, but my wife's a size 10, yeah, around the waist, and she's got a slightly bigger chest. Okay, she's a size 12. I said, do I buy the pack with 10 in or with 10 or 14? And she looked at me and
That's
she
good one.
rolled her eyes and she said, those aren't dress sizes, that's the
Yes.
number of Tampax in a packet.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
So,
Okay. I bet
yeah,
you
but
told
I
that
wasn't afraid to
to
answer the
your wife
question. Okay, so good morning everybody, and welcome to this morning's or lunchtime's webinar for the Scribe Academy. Thank you very much, John, for inviting me along. My name is Lee Jakeman, and I am a partner in LGRC Associates. Today, I wanted to share something a little bit different with the audience. It's not a policy briefing, or it's not a technical update. It's a bit of a personal account, a bit of a journey, the journey of a locum clerk. What I've seen, what I've learned, and to be honest, a few of the mistakes I've made along the way. I do hope there's something for everybody in here. You might find it useful. Whether you're in a permanent role as a clerk or you're thinking of going to locuming or thinking about what comes next in your career. Before I get into the detail, I want to flag three things that I hope you'll take away from today. First, what to do in your first week. I noticed that John did ask Alison, was it? So what she would do immediately. Yeah. Second, how to give advice that protects you, informs the council, and keeps you out of the politics. And third, what the next clerks will find, okay, and how to make sure that what you leave behind is a bit of a legacy, and these three themes will hopefully run through the course of this presentation. Okay, before I get into the substance, let me give you a brief sense of where I came from because I think that context matters. John and I did talk about it and had a little bit of a laugh about it, but I did start my career in the Royal Air Force when I was 16, and that has given me a great grounding in discipline, process, and working under pressure. I then spent a brief time working for a large consultancy firm, Accenture, as an HR business partner, and that gave me a very different perspective on organisational structure, be a commercial venture. From there, I moved into local government and spent 15 years as a town clerk across three large town councils in the West Midlands. However, in 2023, I made a decision but I didn't want to work from 9 till 9, 6 days a week as a chief executive of a large council and grab a bit of my life back. So I packed in work and then threw myself at the mercy of local county associations to see if I get some locum work. But fortunately, I got contacted by LGRC, or I made contact with them, and they offered me a gig that very next day, and I haven't stopped working since. 15 years is a long time as a clerk, not as many as some, and okay, and a lot longer than the average. And I was fortunate to work at councils that delivered a wide range of services: allotments, cemeteries, listed buildings, parks, Christmas lights. I even did the Olympic torch, came through the town in 2012, got involved with that. Went to another town, we did the Commonwealth torch. I've worked in councils where there's been freemen and the full Whigs, and I've done lots of the large pieces of service provision that most of clerks will come across in their journey. So I left my permanent post not to go to a job. No offers, as I said. LGRC contacted me, and I said I have been busy since. But let's move on to something practical, because I think it's the simple things that cause the biggest problems when you arrive somewhere. And as John alluded to, you stole my thunder a bit, John, really, yeah. Where's the laptop password? Who has the bank login details? What's the code in the allotment padlock? These sound trivial, but I've arrived at councils where nobody can answer these questions. You just get a laptop and a key to an office, and nobody's going to speak to you. And then there are the governance questions that matter immediately. Are all councillors regular attendees? Is there anyone approaching the 6 month disqualification threshold? Has the internal auditor been appointed? If you're arriving in January, has the annual risk assessment done? Do you need to get that done before the end of your the agar? I mean, I've arrived in a council, I immediately discovered it was not called. There was only 2 of 13 councillors, and had to run a whole set of elections, and not been able to do anything for 3 months, particularly including not getting paid. But what I do go into a new council, what I do find very useful, is I go into its website. And in the website, I look at the latest minutes. I then look at the policies, read those policies, look for last year's agar, look if there's the payment list for the payments over £500. And you can just then get a feel for which things are being done. So if all those things exist, you think, well, okay, the things beneath it are probably okay. If it's missing the last agar, you're going to ask why. Okay, and it'll probably, just looking at the website, will give you an indication of how good the council is operating beneath the public facing part. And I've used it as a habit, really, when I'm ever clerking. If I get people who ring up and ask how much the hall hire is, rather than me go to the crib sheet on my desk and say, oh, the hall's £20 an hour, I actually go into the website and look what we're advertising to the public to see if that matches. Because you can actually do lots of good work in a council and change policies, and forget to load them up to the website. So if you use the website as your reference for your advice to the public, okay, if it's there and it's up to date, it's a good health check. If you go and look at the pricing for the community hall is last year's rates, it immediately tells you, oh, I forgot to load up. So I use the website often for day-to-day business. So the most difficult thing probably about walking into as a locum is you walk straight into a political environment. Councillors try to win you favour. They will tell you how poor the previous clerk was or how brilliant they were and they shouldn't have left. They'll warn you about a difficult colleague. They'll share grievances they've been building for months or sometimes years. My job is to listen professionally and take no sides. And then there's the meeting management. At almost every council I have gone into, the first vote, I've had to ask the councillors why aren't they putting their hands up around the table when the standing orders clearly say voting should be by a show of hands. Or, I often have to ask them several times what is the actual specific motion they're voting on, just so I can be clear in the minutes. So basically, restoring procedure is the first thing you can do. Okay, when you get in there, make sure the fundamental rules of the council meeting are obeyed. But it's the most visible thing that you can do in your first gig with the council. I want to now spend a few minutes on something that every clerk encounters. Well, I think every clerk encounters, and this can consume a disproportionate amount of time and energy if you let it. And that's difficult correspondence and freedom of information requests. On freedom of information, keep it simple. If someone asks you for information and you have it, provide it. Don't worry about why they want it. You haven't got time for that. If you have it, you can give it to them. FOI is about documents that exist, not the thoughts in someone's head, not the reasons behind decision, not your personal opinion, just the documents. Simply acknowledge within 5 working days, use a standard template. I have a set of words from an email, and it says something along the lines of, thank you for your email, which is being handled as a freedom of information request. You have requested, and I cut and paste precisely their email to me. Yeah. And then after I repeated that, I'll say, and we will look to respond within 20 working days. Okay. That's it. Simple, professional, and it sets the clock running. And the best way to reduce your FOI burden, put the documents you have on your website. Minutes, policies, the agar, the internal auditor's report, payments over £500. If it's already publicly available, you can simply signpost the request there. Saves you having to trawl through files. Now, persistent correspondence. And that's correspondence, CORRESPONDTS. This is a more delicate subject, but an important one. Every council has them. People who flood the inbox with emails, ex-councillors, self-appointed local experts, people who were once important in some capacity and haven't quite let go yet. In my experience, a lot of this correspondence is what I'd call intellectual sport. It keeps their minds occupied, makes them happy, and a quick reply from you is exactly the reward they're looking for. So don't give it to them. If you respond immediately, you simply encourage the next email to arrive that afternoon. So here's a practical test that I use. Does the email contain a question? Has it got a question mark on it? Is it a genuine question? If an email is a rant with no actual question, park it for a while. Give yourself time to think. Leave it for several days. You're not obliged to respond to correspondence that makes no request. And when you do respond, respond once, clearly, and don't then be drawn into an extended debate. Of course, and this is important, the vast majority of correspondence you will receive will be genuine. People who care about their community, those who want to understand the decision, and those who have a legitimate concern. Initially, treat every inquiry with respect and attention. It can help you. It can help the council. It can help the people you serve. The skill is telling the difference between the two and not letting the difficult minority crowd out the genuine majority. Okay, moving on. Documentation and record keeping. Poor documentation is one of the most consistent problems I encounter. Laptops with no logical folder structure. Agendas without accompanying reports. There's no way of understanding the history of an ongoing matter. There's a principle I keep coming back to from my own experience. It's often the simple omission at the beginning that creates the crisis at the end. So here's an example. I've seen more than once a councillor verbally agree to let a local community group use a piece of land. Nobody minuted it properly, no terms were set, no insurance requirement recorded, no end date agreed. 3 years later, a new clerk arrives and the group has built a structure on the land. There is no record of any real decision. There are no terms to enforce, and what started as a friendly, informal arrangement, i.e., a small omission in the minutes of the detail, has become a legal and financial tangle that will take months to resolve. Good record keeping isn't bureaucracy for its own sake. It's protection for the council, for the clerk, and for the community. Every agenda item should really have an accompanying report. Every decision should be clearly minuted. Every commitment should be on paper for somebody else to read later. Everything in the end actually comes down to money. Yeah. I mean, we're all at work for money. Okay. And poorly managed finances, I see as the root of the most common source of conflict between councillors and staff. And yet the tools to get it right are readily available. And financial regulations. Understand every word of them. If you need somebody to translate the language, there's plenty of advice out there. Read the SAP guidance from cover to cover. When the external auditor's notice arrives each year, read every word and follow every link. And please use an industry standard accounts package. Scry and Rialtas, and there are others, produce figures that align precisely with the Agar. And if you leave your post, your successor will likely have some familiarity with the system, or at least a helpline to call. A bespoke spreadsheet rarely helps anyone. So, getting professional advice. I do want to say something about where you seek advice. Says me giving you some advice. Something ironic there, I suppose, because I think it matters more than people realize. I'm going to go on to Facebook, really. And Facebook groups are not a reliable source of professional guidance. They're okay for light-hearted chat and some general comfort, but the questions are often unclear. The answers frequently misunderstand the question, and you have no idea who you're talking to or what their experience actually is. Why ask Facebook when you can ask your county association? Why ask Facebook how to do something on Scribe when Scribe will answer you directly, and I might add very quickly and professionally, John, through their helpline? Okay? Those you know and trust are likely already to be in your network. Use them. And if you're generally unsure about something, say so. I'll check and confirm. Yeah? It's a professional answer, and bluffing is not. So we're about halfway through, and I thought I'd like to pause here for a few minutes. I'll do a very quick recap of what we covered, and then I'll welcome any questions if you think that's appropriate, John, or any observations. The locum role is often called in when things have gone wrong. Neutrality and professionalism from day one are essential. The simplest things cause the biggest problems on arrival: passwords, bank access, governance status. Good documentation and record keeping is protection for you and the council. And use trusted, sector-specific sources of advice: ALC, SLCC, Scribe Helpline, those sort of bodies. Okay, so this is on to a bit about the legacy. And this is probably the most counterintuitive thing I've said all day. Sometimes you need to let things break. Too often, clerks, me included, botch things to get them done under pressure from councillors, and we cut corners to keep the peace. And what this allows is councils to insist on things having been always done this way, and that the rules don't really apply. If the council doesn't agree with its standing orders, it shouldn't just sign them off each year and then ignore them. Yeah, it should rewrite them to suit them, as long as it's within the legal guidelines. Let the internal auditor do their job. Let them criticise standing orders. If the council have come to decisions by not listening to standing orders, let the internal auditor say it. That gives you some way to go back to them and say, sort of, I told you so. Let poor practice surface. You know, there's a fire door analogy I use. You know, I walk into community buildings all the time and the fire doors are wedged open. People say, we always do. It's a bit hot. I need a draft. But the fire doors are kept closed for a reason. They protect from serious injury. Okay. Rules exist for a reason. However, clearly, some balance is required about the severity of the risk. But the general principle, I think, upholds. Okay, so I've been involved in a number of large capital projects, something I don't think we or even central government does particularly well. Not, sorry, as well as it might do. So I've done town hall refurbishments, large asset transfers, and some major capital works. And one of the most consistent problems I've seen is that the council forgets it's the client. Yeah? A councillor says, you know, I've been doing this in business for years, I can manage this, and they provide a lot of inputs and help and guidance, and it's very good. Yeah. They commit enthusiastically. They then disappear when it gets difficult, or they move away from the area, and the clerk is left holding the baby. And then the contractors and architects and project managers pitch up to site meetings and start telling the client how it is. No. They report to the client. The client, the taxpayer, is footing the bill, and the council calls the shots. So getting external help might be necessary, okay? But it's not always the answer. But if you do bring in consultants and you're paying people a fair wage to do it, says me who does that sort of thing, okay, make sure the council still leads and owns the project. So managing the role of the clerk, always a difficult one. We never know quite who our boss is, do we? We never do. Okay. And there's plenty of people out there, some one of 10,000 residents and one of any one of 18 councillors. But councillors do need to understand what you do, how you do it, and how much time it takes. So write reports, you know, give them the information In constructed reports, they'll have options. Keep a timesheet. Lots of clerks are part-time, okay? If you just annotate that 4 hours a day doing the end of year annual governance return, yeah, or in the office, yeah? Set some core working hours. If you come and go as you please, then is it not reasonable that the councillors expect you to respond as they please? Have honest conversations with the councillors and council. Accept strong challenge. There is a fine line between strong challenge and unreasonable behaviour. And I think everybody on this podcast will understand that we've often fall the wrong side of the fence on those issues. However, try and compartmentalise issues. If you're working on one project and it doesn't go the way you were thinking it was going, don't let that animosity affect your next debate with the same set of councillors about another project or option. Transparency builds trust, and trust is what makes the role sustainable. This isn't been about rigid. There will always have to be flexibility, but there should be a clear, agreed framework within which flexibility operates. So let me pull a few key lessons from everything I've described. Know what you don't know and say so. Use specific tools, trusted sources, document everything, learn from every assignment. Don't get drawn into the politics. I do want to say a brief word about LGRC, sorry for the plug, folks, and about why you might consider an organisation like LGC rather than a sole trader when you need locum or consultancy support. We provide clerk and RFO cover, HR and recruitment support, finance and compliance advice, as well as public engagement services. Beyond the services themselves, there are some important practical reasons to using an organisation. Associates are vetted before deployment. We have professional indemnity insurance, so if something goes wrong, the council has recourse. An organisation like LGRC, and there are lots of others, LCC charges, okay, we have a reputation to maintain, which means the business will manage performance and uphold standards. We have a network of associates who share knowledge and fill in each other's gaps. And of course, there's a formal contract between LGRC and the council, which sets out the commitment clearly for both sides. No ambiguity, no misunderstanding. I want to end the substantive part of my presentation with something aimed specifically at those who are currently in permanent posts. One day you're going to leave it. You'll retire. You'll move on. You'll simply decide it's time for something new. When you do, what will the next clerk find when they arrive? In each of my three permanent roles, I think Alison's one of the people before has said this. They took over from somebody who'd left quickly, and none of them left me a handover. Your legacy as a permanent clerk is being written right now. It's every file you save, every process you document, every system you put in place, a well-structured filing system, industry standard software, a good council and good governance health. These are the gifts you can give your successor. Make them count. Then a word about professional authority. The council should not be assured by something simply because the clerk said so. You might well have said so, but you should have been able to say so on the basis of the underlying legislation or the guidance which you are able to produce if asked. Know Charles Arnold Baker well. Know the SAP guidance. Know how to navigate legislation.gov.uk. When you advise the council, name your source. The Local Government 1972 requires dot 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 dot. And that carries far more weight than I think. It's just more professional. Finally, I want to talk about something I think is slightly undervalued. It's the quality of the reports we write. We should write a report for almost every agenda item, complex agenda item. We should serial number them and structure them consistently. And what I tend to use is a five-part structure. So I have the aim at the top. And the aim, which actually they then cut and paste into the agenda, okay, the aim becomes the agenda item. For this instance, to receive the agar and supporting information and to consider a recommendation and that the council approves the annual financial governance statement. Second, I'll then give some background, the legislative basis. So that would be we're required to produce annual governance return annually and name the we reviewed SAP guidance. Then you move on to the third bit, the discussion, which is your professional advice and the main points of the argument. Any risk or any compliance issues or any financial obligations. Fourth, you then want a two-paragraph summary of the discussion. And then the fifth, give some options and recommendations. I would suggest always look to give at least two options, even if one of them is to do nothing. Then state your recommendation clearly. This structure does several things for me. It forces me to think clearly before the meeting. I read the reports that the councillors are getting. It gives councillors the information they need to make a good decision, and it creates a searchable archive that protects everyone when questions are asked later. When a councillor asks you, what would you do? Resist the temptation to say, I would do XYZ. I did that a lot in my early career. That's not really your role. Your role is to present options, some more suitable than others, and let the council decide. Every option you list must be one you are generally content with. If the council chooses it, it must not, of course, put the council at unnecessary risk. Do nothing and maintaining the status quo is often a legitimate option. Include it and explain its consequences clearly. When you do have a preferred recommendation, say so clearly. You will see from my report that I've come to the conclusion option two is the best. Give your reasons, and those reasons might be it delivers the requirements, it's best value for money, it takes advantage of funding only available now, or the urgency slightly outweighs the small increase in cost. These are professional judgments, and the council isn't entitled to hear them, but the decision is theirs. In conversation with members, use language that is helpful but not committal until you've had time to think. My initial thoughts are that option X is worth exploring. It solves the immediate crisis and matches our current policy, or something can be done, but you'll need to give me more time to think through the detail. Or we can do it. This is probably one for most people, but I would need more hours, an additional budget, external help. I might need a DPIA completed first. These phrases help keep you in the advisory role. They're helpful, professional, and honest about what you know and what we don't.
Yeah, that was great advice. Everything's like, I mean, it's the softer stuff I liked you sharing, Lee. You know, like simple things, really trying to remain neutral. You're going to get all these incoming when you first turn up. You get ex-councillors, councillors, and everyone like trying to get you on side. I love the one of participating in intellectual sport. That was an awesome one. Yeah, some people love that. Keeps them busy. Yeah, exactly. And they love it. And yeah, the one about legacy, always thinking about that. So I always almost think about that like managing yourself out of your job or like trying to make yourself redundant. It seems a bit peculiar, but you've got to think about that. And the side effect of that, even if you are in a job and you're not a locum clerk and you're not, you know, basically a locum clerk is preparing for the handover, isn't it? Aren't they, you know, like managing themselves out of the job. But even if you're in that job for long term, it's going to reduce your stress a lot. You know, because if your house is in order, if you go on holiday, you can hand over certain parts of your job to individuals. So, you know, and then you can go on holiday not worrying about anything that you might be messaged or anything like that. So it's really, really good advice there. So being a locum clerk sounds like a challenging and stressful role. Why do you do it, Lee? What's the benefit?
Well, I do it for the first point because it's challenging. Yeah. Okay. If you don't get up in the morning for a challenge, you might as well stay in bed and just scratch your ear. So challenges prompt the mind to be active. They're only stressful if you bite off more than you can chew. You're only going to sell your services as a contractor if you're pretty good at what you do. And the things you don't know, admit you don't know them. If somebody wants you to do 10 things, well, here, as an analogy, people ask me what's a good clerk required for a good clerk, and I say there's about 100 things you need to be the perfect clerk: facilities management, public engagement, some legal background, financial. There's hundreds of things. Okay, if you can find a clerk that's got five of them, yeah, okay, and knows that he doesn't know the other 95%, you're finding a good clerk. So don't worry about what you don't know, but admit it. So it's stressful. Stress is a good thing to a certain extent. But the advantage is I've been round to lots of councils and I've seen some wonderful practice. I've seen some poor practice. Yeah. Every assignment makes me a better clerk because I've either learned that something I do is good because it's failed there, or something I'm doing which might be adequate, be better by somebody else. So I learn every day.
Yeah, your learning rate just exponentially increases compared to like 15, your last 15 years compared to someone 15 years in the same council. It's like not even linear. It's like, you know, flat, but like getting that experience from
There
all those different
is an
councils.
interesting point. Somebody who's got 20 years of experience might have 20 years of the same yearly experience. Yeah, it doesn't mean you've got 20 years of different experiences.
It's a really good question, and maybe several people can contribute to it. So Leanne asks, she's going for a first ever interview for a parish clerk position next week. Any advice on interview questions, general advice? So how can she land this?
Okay, so prepare well. Yeah, invest lots of time and effort. I would read the job description again and again. Understand exactly what they require from you. Read the advert. Read the website. What are the councillors trying to do? What is the council's vision? Yeah, are its finances up to date? What services does it provide? Who are the councillors? The website is the key. Yeah, it should tell you who the chair of the council is, what committees it's got, what responsibilities, what services, what staff it has. And it'll have some fun stuff. Read their Facebook comments. But then the point is, you need to sell yourself and understand that you are not going to be able to do everything that is required of them. You will need to buy in help. You might be an HR and a finance expert and have no experience in facilities management. Sell your good points well, give clear examples. Yeah. And when you don't know a question, I don't know is a good starting answer, but you then need to signpost where you would find that question, that answer. Okay. I don't know, but I would contact NALC, the SLCC, the Association of Local Councils. Yeah. Or ask the council. So, what su external support is available to me for those bits that I'm less familiar with? Yeah. Read their website, understand it from it.
Cool.
Is that okay?
I've got a follow-up question for that, Lee. It's kind of the opposite, actually. It's like, obviously, Leanne, yes, says it's a new parish clerk, it's a new position. On the other side, what are the red flags? What questions can she ask to maybe actually not take the job? Especially if you're a new clerk, it can be a very painful experience. Like you join a, yeah, so what questions can she ask to avoid getting the job, let's say?
Okay, so I would be asking a couple of general questions, maybe not this blunt, but in this general term. Yeah. How will my performance and my workload be managed by the council? Who am I reporting to? Yeah. Is it the chair, is it staffing committee? And then I would probably looking to ask them what their vision is, for the, talk this all around, haven't I? So, what would the council be looking for? So, red flags to me would be it's about how the interview goes. And you need some good interviewers on the panel. Some people just come out with comments to say, yeah, I'm good at Excel. Yeah, I'm good at Microsoft. You need to delve into those questions. Give me an example when you've used Excel. Give me an example. So, the candidate needs to be able to understand, do they, so when they're asked a question, they should, if you're asked a question about a technical piece of work, yeah. Don't just say, "Yeah, I'm good at it. I've done it before." Give some examples, and if they're not able to feedback on to you about those responses, then they probably haven't thought the questions very well.
Follow-on question: is there a scale for locum? What is the hourly rate for locum rather than an employee? I don't know whether you can share it or not, but I guess it varies.
Well, it absolutely varies. Depends what you're selling, what your experience is, what the council is, but there's a general rate that is probably linked to size of precepts and number of services. If you run a small parish council and you've done some grass cutting, looks after the cemetery, your experience might not be quite the same as a large town council like Shrewsbury or Falmouth, where you're running ports and harbours and dozens of buildings. So it's a movable feast, and there's room for every level. Okay, the opportunities clearly are probably more available in the medium to largest town councils, which are quite can be quite complex. But whilst the hourly rate might be quite good, I don't get holiday pay. I got no sick entitlement, so you do lose those privileges. But you can work in bursts. Okay, so I think if you're good enough, you can get some good rates. But we're not out to fleece anybody. Because you won't get any work. You might get one gig at a high price, but nobody will ever touch you with a barge pole. It's about quality of service and consistency and being able to accept a workload that fits with your lifestyle.
Cool. Excellent. So if people were interested in like getting a locum job through LGRC, what's the process for just go to the website?
Well, I would suggest the first thing to do is send us an email at info@lgrc.uk.
Cool. We'll share that in the email. It will share that in
And just
the. I'll
say,
share.
attended Lee's webinar, be interested to chat. Okay, but if you go to our website, we do ask people to express an interest. info@lgrc.uk.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Lee. Really good learning about all your experiences you've had locums with so many town and parish councils over the years. So, what's one thing you'd like listeners to take away from your session today if they take a step back?
Okay, I like people to listen, to be prepared to listen to all advice given, yeah? Sift that out, and those credible bits, and those bits that sit with you, use them, yeah? But then make your decisions, own those decisions, yeah? The advice, okay, is free. The decisions sit with you, and don't be afraid to make the decisions, but do own them.
That's a great
That'd
bit
be
of
my.
advice there. That's in general, generally in life, I would say. I mean, I also asked this question, one bit of advice that you'd give to your 18-year-old self, but I'm going to actually downgrade that to 15-year-old self, considering at 16 you already were entering the RAF. If you approach your 15-year-old self, what kind of advice would you give them and would they listen?
Set yourself ambitions, ambitious targets, be ready to fail, but surround yourself with good people.
Good. Great bit of advice. So we have this pay it forward question. So the previous guest asked a great question, actually, very timely. And then I'll also ask you to ask a question for the next guest. So the question is, what's the first change you would introduce if you were the new prime minister that you think you would make, and that change that you think would make everybody's lives better?
Okay, so I looked at this very briefly. I had lots of thoughts about it, but actually, it's quite simple. I would immediately look to change the way the Prime Minister is elected, because if the current system got me, then the system is failing.
I like it. Yes. Okay, that's a good answer. But yeah, it's yeah, that's also yeah, good answer. A bit of a joke in there as well. Excellent. So what question do you have for our next guest?
Okay, of all the places you've visited in the last 10 to 15 years, which one do you remember most fondly and why? Because life is full of experiences. We pick up experiences.
Yeah, it is. It is. We just got back from 3 weeks in Australia. And yeah, had a lot of new experiences. But yeah, it is that's what life is about, new experiences. And you've had certainly had plenty of experiences in your life, particularly through the RAF. But excellent. Thanks, Lee, for coming along to talk today, share your knowledge and answer all those questions with the audience. Really appreciate